Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello and welcome to the show where we give you the lowdown, the inside information and the word from the experts to help you use the internet as part of your marketing machine. Internet Marketing is brought to you by AI Digital at www.ai-digital.com. And in episode 54, we have some questions about SMS marketing, email, putting live chat on your webpage, and how to get early episodes of this podcast series. A little bit of gossip about Google and Twitter, an update on the book I'm writing, and an interview with Miles Galliford of SubHub. Enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome to another exciting episode of Internet Marketing. I have with me my laughing co-hosts. We have Mr. Kelvin Newman.
Bonjour, as they say in France.
Who maybe has been to France recently, I'm not quite sure why I said that. We have Daniel Rowles.
Hello Andy.
And we have Helen Trendle.
Good morning.
Queen of the acronyms. God, I've become Jonathan Ross. Okay, this morning, we've got some questions this morning, haven't we, team? And we've got some gossip from about Google and Twitter from Daniel, and then an interview that yours truly did. But first of all, the questions. I think that Kelvin is doing the honours with the questions, aren't you?
Yeah. Kelvin? Yeah, I mean, over the last month or two, we've had quite a lot of questions into the site, and you know, via the various people contacting us, either via IMPC, you know, using the hashtag IMPC, or dropping us an email. So that's been quite good. And a lot of the people on who sent those questions in have said how much they enjoy the shows where, rather than talking about one particular theme, we just respond to people's questions. So yeah, I've got a bunch of questions, none of them that, you know, I've shared drastically with the people before, so it's going to be their gut feeling on what they think are the best answers to these questions. So I've got about, I think, six questions from five different people who have all got in contact. So yeah, if it's okay, I'll dive in with those ones and see what you guys have to say about all of them, if that's all right.
Mr. Newman, proceed with the first question.
Brilliant,
please.
Brilliant. Well, the first question was from a chap called Pete Robinson. He had a couple of questions, but he said how he was a relatively new listener and he enjoyed the podcast. And, you know, well, we're going to sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet now here, but he said some very nice things about the podcast anyway. And the first question. It's nice when people send in those kind of responses. You know, you know, people are appreciating your work then, which is nice. But yeah, and the first question he had was. He said, I know you're called the Internet Marketing Podcast, but I'm really keen to hear about either text, SMS or email marketing as a topic. He says he uses Campaign Monitor as a tool and really rates it. But is there any kind of SMS tools or email marketing tools that we've had experience of that we enjoy using that we'd recommend out there to the listeners?
Well, do you know, I've had no experience at all, but I can tell that Daniel has.
It's quite an interesting one because a lot of people might know I do a lot of training for the Chartered Institute of Marketing and I do teach their email marketing course. And it's quite a common question. There's a lot of platforms out there for sending out email campaigns and SMS campaigns and just knowing the difference between them and what's a good one to use. So one that I've had a lot of experience with and has always worked fairly well for me is Pure 360. So if you go to the word pure360.com, you'll see that I have a really good email marketing tool there. A lot of the tools are very similar, that they split it into three sections. You input a list, you build an email campaign, and then you set a delivery time. The good thing about Pure, though, is it also does SMS campaigns within the same interface. So if you're looking for something that makes it a lot easier, it's one I'd recommend. What I will say, though, is SMS campaigns are very, very hard. to get right because of the fact that it feels very interactive marketing if you're not very careful. So it's a lot better to do it in a way where somebody's requesting something specific and you respond to that request rather than sending people constant updates by SMS, because it can be quite intrusive and there's a lot of negative feedback from that kind of thing. Another company might be interested in, if you want to start sending out SMS campaigns and MMS campaigns and that kind of thing, is a company called Mobify. So Mobify. And they supply services where you can have a number that you can send messages into and that can be transferred into a website and that kind of thing. And I've just set up a website really recently called ArtBuzz, which allows people to send in MMS messages live of an art event they're at, and they'll be sent live into this kind of this website. So if you want to have a look at that, have a look at artbuzz.it. So artbuzz.it, just to see how that works as well.
You know, I'd completely forgotten that Pure 360 did SMM messaging as well. I just thought of them as an email marketing company. Completely forgotten about that. Anyone else had any experience with SMS marketing?
I used to run quite a few email and SMS campaigns in a previous life, working in sort of employee benefits. We used to do sort of big campaigns there, so people could sign up to access all the sort of discounts on sort of shopping and travel and things like that. And then we'd send newsletters out. And then they could also sign up to sort of big competitions and things like that using their mobile phones as well. So we kind of integrated the two. And that was using a tool called SignUpTo, which is a bit tricky on the domain, but it's sign-up.to.
Is that the number two, Helen, or the word two?
The word two. So .to instead of .com or .co.uk. And the good thing about SignUpTo, I mean, they do work with some sort of quite large brands like The Economist and Siemens and people like that. But the great thing about them is you can start off really small. So if you're a small business, you can actually get 50 contacts on the database free of charge and it won't cost you anything. So you can dip your toe in the water, run a few campaigns on a very small basis, and then you only start paying once you go above having 50 contacts on the database. So it's quite a good way to start off if you're you know, a small business.
Okay.
Cool, yeah, and the only thing I've really got to add is just think about your execution on all of it. So it's with these ones, because the tools are so integral to how you go about doing it, so you kind of go, okay, well, we want to do some email marketing, we need to find an email marketing tool, or we want to do some SMS marketing, we need to think about the tool to do that. I'd say, remember, you really need to still remember what you're doing, the creative, the idea behind that still needs to be really compelling. Like Daniel was saying, text messaging particularly, it can be really, you know, disruptive to people if they're getting that text message and see it as not. I mean, a great example is I once entered a competition for the Argus, the local newspaper down here in Brighton, and now whenever they've got a special feature in their newspaper, i.e. every other day, they're sending me a text message saying, buy the paper today, and it's actually had a negative impact for something that started out quite positive. I was entering a competition, but now they're kind of spamming me, and it just has the opposite effect. So yeah, make sure you don't overwhelm people and try and make it, you know, intelligent and different to what they might expect.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, email marketing as well, one of the main things that we're doing the training courses for the CIM is that the first main point is that email can be massively effective, the return on investment can be phenomenal, but it can also be utterly useless. And it really does mean you have to follow best practice, you have to really do things carefully, think about your reason for engaging with people, don't bombard them, customize what you're sending to them, and just make sure you're getting through that kind of spam mentality we've all developed, where we're just expecting spam on a constant basis.
Okay, then. Should we proceed on to the next question, Kelvin?
Yeah, the next one from Pete is kind of a bit about this podcast. He was asking, you know, he really enjoys the podcast. Really wondered if we ever would do it more frequently. I don't know if that's something we've ever really talked about in terms of frequency of podcasts. I know Andy's a bit of an expert on podcasts. What's your attitude on the you know, the ideal frequency of a podcast, Andy?
Do you know something, team? I would love to do this podcast more frequently.
Well, maybe that's a good point we could do here is that if anyone, you know, likes the idea of us going doing this more frequently than once a month, if they could let us know this month, that'd be great, because that's, you know, from our perspective, what we don't want to do is inundate people that this podcast becomes too frequent, and then that they don't listen to them all, or you know, it becomes a bit too much to keep up with. I'm interested to know what people's opinion is on that, really.
Well, maybe
it's
they
interesting.
Could, sorry, Dan, I was just going to say maybe there could be more frequent but shorter.
Yeah, that's another possibility, isn't it? Really. Because, yeah, we do. When I get talking, there's no stopping me. That's my problem, isn't it, Andy?
Well, I do always keep my finger on the fade-out switch when you're talking, Kelvin. You know, no, I think you have good information. Did I hear someone else piping up then to say something?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually asked this question through Twitter maybe a year back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Generally, the response was the more often the better, as long as we can keep the quality of the content up.
Yeah.
So I think on a practical terms, I think we could probably go to doing it a couple of times a month, but people let us know through email, through Twitter, and hashtag it up, IMPC, and let us know what you think, how often we should be doing it.
Yeah, we're going to crowdsource this one, I think.
Brilliant. Well, the next question then was from a chap called Mark Ashworth. And his question, I'll read it all out because that's probably the best way to explain it there. He says, "Hi, I'm a subscriber to the Internet Marketing Podcast, and I have a quick question. Whilst I appreciate you must get loads of questions, and he asked if we could answer this on the podcast. He has about 500 email addresses that are active clients and about 1,500 that have contacted him in the past for information about their services. And he would now like to contact. He's wondering, we've touched on this a little bit, about what the best tool is, but are there any UK-based companies that offer alternative solutions to a US company who he's heard of called iContact? So I think maybe what he's looking for is rather than just the tool, like we were talking with Pure 360 about how you go about finding an email marketing supplier, I suppose, is the question here, really.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's some great tools out there. We talked about Pure 360. There's Vertical Response, which is a great one, and MailChimp. It's something I've been playing around with quite a lot lately, which is fantastic as well, which goes in line with SurveyMonkey. So there's a bit of a monkey theme going on. But they're both great tools. I think in terms of if you're looking for a company to do a lot of this for you, or maybe manage the whole process as well, a company I've had recent experience with that has been really good is something called Alchemy Works.
Okay.
And Works spelt with an X on the end for some reason. So, but Alchemy Works, they'll recommend... you know, whether or not what service you should use, what provider you should use, the content, that kind of thing. And I know that Site Visibility and AI Digital obviously do email marketing services for a lot of their clients as well. So most digital marketing agencies will supply that service. They'll have a tool of preference probably that they're used to working with, they're happy to work with. But I think the other thing that comes out of that is that if he's got these email addresses, what he needs to be aware of are, has he got people to opt in, and some of the legal kind of requirements around that as well?
Yeah, so what's the basics then on that, Daniel and Helen? I know that you guys have got the experience on that, and that's probably, for guys who've never done any email marketing before, what do they need to know about their list of emails that they've got before they can start sending emails out to people?
Okay, well, it depends where you are in the world, obviously. In the US, there's the CAN spam legal kind of requirements that basically say what you need to do in terms of... one-click opt-out being really important. So if you are going to email people, making it really easy to opt out is important. Now, that's particularly important because you don't want people in your list that don't really want to receive your email, but because it's so complicated to unsubscribe, they end up just putting you in their spam filter. Because it's easier just to put it, yeah. And I think it's a lot easier to do that a lot of the time. So one-click unsubscribe, really important, applies to a lot of the laws as well. From an EU, so from a kind of European point of view, one of the important things that splits is whether you're working business to consumer or if you're working business to business.
Okay.
So what the law basically says is if you're business to business, you need to have an existing relationship. Now, an existing relationship is very easily fudged, to be honest. And you could say, well, this person gave me their business card at a conference 5 years ago. We've got an existing relationship. Best practice would say somebody needs to have opted in and said, I would like to receive email updates from you. On a business to consumer, so if you're selling directly to consumers, you need to have an opt-in. And this is generally best practice across the board anyway. People need to have said to you, yes, please send me newsletters. Now, just because somebody has bought something from you doesn't mean they've opted in for a newsletter.
So what would you recommend then? Sorry, Daniel, it's a button there. What would you recommend then if you've got that list of people who have bought from you in the past but haven't opted in, you didn't know that you needed to get them to opt in, but you've kind of got this list. Do you then send them an email saying, would you like to opt in? Or do you just have to then start from scratch with a new list there?
Well, I'd say, I mean, if it's vague, I mean, a lot of the time people have lists, they're not sure if they're opt-in or not. They're saying, well, I think they opted in, but I'm not sure what happened at the time, that kind of thing. What I generally say is that you can do one of two things, well, one of three things. You could be super strict and say, right, I can't contact them because at the end of the day, I'm not sure if they opted in. What people tend to do is say, I'll send them a one-time email saying, we have your details on record. Would you be interested in receiving X, Y, and Z? And generally people incentivize that as well by putting them into a prize draw or saying they'll give them free access to an ebook or something like that. So that's fairly acceptable. Where that sits legally is slightly vague, and I'd be quite interested to hear people's opinions on that. The other way of doing it, which I've actually found is the most effective way of doing it, is if you've got people's contact details and their email details, and you've checked that they're not on telephone preference service or something similar, meaning that you're not allowed to phone them, a quick phone call to people saying, hi, I've got your details for this reason. I wondered if it was okay to put you on my email list, and getting an opt-in actually by speaking to somebody, you'll find works really well because people generally will say yes when you speak to them, actually personalize it in that way. And they'll say, fine, yeah, opt me into your list. So try and do it in a personal way. Try and, you know, if you've tell people where you've got their email address from in the first place. Is it the fact that you just collected their details at a conference, or is it the fact that you did do some business with them in the past? Tell them why that is and then ask them to opt in.
It sounds to me like this person has got quite a big list of emails that he wants to put on a list. And in my experience, I mean, I use GetResponse, and I'll tell you a little story about GetResponse in a minute. I know a lot of people that use Aweber. I mean, these are just general sort of online email list managers. But in my experience, if you start off and you've got like some sort of historic list of emails and you want to put them on a list, you have to. The only way you can get them on that list is to have each of them sent automatically an invite to join the list, which is my experience of it.
Yeah, and I think it's that one-time invite kind of thing. And the more personal you can make that to explain where you've got the data from, and the better. But you just need to be very careful because essentially if you're emailing somewhere and you've just, you know, you don't know where you pick the email up, you'll be breaking best practice rules in the first place.
Yeah. You have to be a bit careful as well with some email list managers. I mean, with GetResponse, I had a bit of an unpleasant experience a few weeks ago where I used it to... I formed a new list with it. So basically people... You know, I wanted to get a list of people into it. So each of those people automatically got an invite email inviting them to join the list. But when they did and were asked to click the sort of confirm link, they were taken back to a web page that had, down one side of it, had loads of really horrible, spammy, junky adverts. Mm. And a couple of them got really offended by that. And that was because the default setting on GetResponse was to have these this sort of block of adverts in when they confirm on the confirm screen. And it was ticked by default, and you have to manually untick them. So just watch out for things like that because it can upset people.
Yeah, so a lot of these companies that offer free hosting or cheap hosting or free services, they'll make money by putting advertising on the page.
Yeah.
So you just have to be careful of the type of advertising that ends up on the page as well. It's interesting how a lot of people, on a similar note, people that were using Google Ads within their pages, they're using AdSense system to monetize their websites, and they're actually moving away from Google because they have similar kind of complaints where people feel that a lot of the ads that are coming up were fairly spammy. So it is something to be really careful of, the quality of your ads and what reflection that has on your website or people's impression of pages they're landing on.
Yeah, sure. Any further views on this, or shall we move on to the next question?
Well, I just got something with regards to email marketing. It's just with the sort of question around, you know, choosing a supplier. I just thought of a quick sort of checklist of things just to go through and to make sure that the supplier is helping you with. I tried to make it into an acronym, but I haven't been able to do it in that short space of time. But it's kind of four sort of steps. So the first thing is what's the purpose of the email? Which I think can sometimes be overlooked in terms of, you know, is it about stock clearance? Is it going to be a newsletter? Are you going to be sending special offers? Is it going to be to announce new products? Is it when you've got, you know, sort of new thought leadership pieces, if it's sort of white papers and reports and things like that? So obviously that comes down to the type of business that you've got. And I think if you've got a clear idea of exactly what the purpose of the email is, then that really helps to answer a lot of other questions such as frequency and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, just sorry, Callan, to interrupt on that, but I think that's a really good point, because so many people send out a newsletter once a month. That's just what they've decided to do. So they run around 2 days before the email has to go out thinking, oh, what content can we get into this? And you end up with an email newsletter that's just done monthly because people feel it should be done monthly. They send it out, they put in some content that's about the company, it's not about the potential customer, and it just is not effective. And that's why email rates, you know, drop down so low. So I think you're right, really stepping back and thinking, why are you doing this campaign in the first place? It's really important what value it's going to provide.
Definitely. I think a key point here is value. What value can it add?
Yeah.
So once you've got that, then it's just a case of looking at the who's going to write it and who's going to design it. And a lot of the times those can be two completely different skill sets of people. With the writing, you know, you need to be thinking about things like subject line, personalization, calls to action, if it's got send to a friend feature, if it's got landing pages that link to the offer that you might have, so that when people go back to the website, they can actually, there's some relation to what they've read in the email. And I suppose the other side is, when you're designing it, is thinking about making sure that it works in all the different email clients, which from our experience can tend to be the thing that takes a lot of time. And I think it's important for sort of people being on the receiving end of working with an agency or working with an email provider, that, you know, that is definitely a very large proportion of where they're going to be spending their time, is going to be making sure that it looks the same whether people are reading it in Gmail or Outlook or Hotmail. And the final point is just really tying it back to your website. So if you're, you know, going about creating regular emails, add a sign-up form onto your website as well, so people can sign up there as well. So people come to your website, for some reason they don't, you know, want to buy from you straight away, you can keep in contact with them and they can sign up. Again, if you're giving them something of value, such as, you know, an opportunity to receive special offers, that's a clear benefit and reason for them to part with their email address.
And then you start to build a relationship, so they're going to trust you much more then as well, isn't it? It's that whole permission marketing stuff. Once you kind of can start to build that relationship, it's understanding that a lot of people are going to visit your website, aren't going to purchase on that first occasion. So it's how can you start to build a relationship, and email is brilliant for that.
There is actually an acronym there, Helen. You have got an acronym.
Have you worked one out?
Yeah, it's really obvious one. It's
You're going to remember that one, aren't you? That's going to cut straight to the chase.
Purpose, frequency, value, website. There you go. As he moves away from the mic. Anyway, have we fully covered that topic, or should we move on to the... I noticed we're a good 20 minutes into the podcast, and we've got another 20-minute episode interview to go, so should we move on to the next question?
Yeah, let's dive into the next one. This is from a chap called Chris Boyce, and his question was, his wife runs a counselling business specialising in working with those who are affected by bereavement, especially the death of a child, terminal illness, rape or sexual abuse, and that's at carpdmcounselling.org.uk. And in addition to home visits and telephone counselling, she most often communicates with clients using Microsoft Messenger. It provides a good degree of anonymousness, yeah, and detachment that can be helpful when talking about kind of traumatic events. And they're in the process of updating and renewing the website, and they're looking for a mechanism whereby prospective clients can ask her questions over a kind of an instant message style functionality that would work with the web page. It's a kind of live chat and that kind of thing there, and, you know, something that then has the ability to switch to non-real-time email or something in the future. Is that, you know, that kind of live chat functionality, is that any thing that you guys have had experience of, and tips for how to best implement that, particularly for a kind of counselling style application?
So let me just get the head right. Is this a live chat on the website, is it?
Yeah, they've always done it via MSN, but they're relaunching the website, and I think his hope is that they could add a kind of live chat functionality that worked well, but also kind of had the ability to feed in maybe to email or maybe even a CRM, I suppose, later down the line as well.
There is a system called WLM Status, and the website, if I'm not much mistaken, let me just check. Yeah, it's WLMstatus.net. And that allows you just to pull through your live messenger status onto your website. So you can just see what people are up to and if they're online and that kind of thing or not. There is another website that's got lots of stuff on how you can integrate Messenger called iMessenger, but it's spelled imessenger.com. So there's no E between the G and the R. So iMessenger.com, but we'll put this into the show notes. That's got lots of different tools that you can use to integrate Messenger into your website. And there's lots of libraries that you can use to actually... there's something called Messenger Plus Live plugin that allows you to kind of control Messenger from your website and vice versa as well. So I have used it before in the past. And the one thing I'll say is that unless you're online a lot of the time, it can actually be a little bit negative. You need to be careful because if you constantly, your status on showing on your website is that you're not online, it kind of feels like the website's not live. It's not kind of happening. And we had it before where we set up a live messenger system for a car dealership, and the car dealership was offering servicing. And the idea was that you could go on and you could ask when the next available service was and ask some questions, you know, online for free. The problem was it wasn't always manned. There wasn't always someone there actually answering these calls. And there were lots of messages when we look back in the history saying, hello, hello, anybody there? So it had a really negative effect on the audience. So can work really well. Lots of ways to integrate it. Have a look at a couple of those websites, but just be cautious because unless you're live a lot of the time, it's not necessarily going to have a good impression.
There are. I mean, what about the idea of just being able to leave a message from the website? And there is, and I've completely forgotten the name, but it begins with a V. That doesn't really narrow it down too much, does it?
127th of the...
yes. I'll see if I can dig it out and put it in the show notes. But basically, you're able to sort of embed a sort of recorder into your website, and providing they had a microphone plugged in, they could just leave a message, and you, obviously then you could just pick it up as and when. I think it might have even emailed the messages to you. I can't quite remember now. But there's doesn't Spinvox do it?
Yeah, I think that's kind of their general idea, isn't it, on Spinvox, that they'll record your voicemail. So if you could put a voicemail there, that's maybe it. I don't know if that kind of works in the same way that if someone's leaving you voicemails, it turns into an email. So that could be quite handy from that perspective.
Yeah, I get the impression that Spinvox, isn't it? Spinvox is more of a sort of a back-end service.
Yeah.
So that you point phone calls to Spinvox. I think they give you a number. And then what Spinvox will do is they'll attempt to turn that into text and send it to you as an email.
I mean, the thing I've seen work a lot, I mean, the problem with a lot of these things, they rely on you having a microphone or webcam or something like that installed on your computer. The reason Messenger is great is the fact that everyone's got the equipment to do it if you're just typing in on the computer.
Yes.
There are lots of plugins. I mean, a good example, if you have a look at there's a website, hostmysite.com, which is a great hosting company, and they essentially do a lot of customer support for a kind of similar interface, and that gets used an awful lot. So, but they have technicians on hand 24 hours a day to answer these kind of messages.
Yeah.
So there is a resource associated with this, unfortunately.
Yeah, I suppose for Chris and his wife there, that probably might be quite difficult. The one thing I'd add as well is that I've been on a couple of sites recently where they've got this live chat functionality and they're trying to drive you to it, and it just acts as a pop-up. So it pops up and says, hey, have a live chat, before you've even had a chance to look around the website, which that kind of is kind of counterproductive then as well, because that kind of says, oh, well, you know, leave me a second here to suss out whether I want to talk to you or not before you start diving in and trying to sell me something here. So I know that what their aim is to try and kind of get a conversation started, but sometimes that can be kind of counterproductive. You've got to bear in mind that a lot of people who are viewing your website are browsing, they're not buying or, you know, wanting to get in contact straight away.
I think that the best thing with this is to set expectation. So have something like WLM status on your site saying when you're on live, but put a statement next to it saying, we will be online, ready to answer your questions between these hours, in this time zone, on this times of day. And then it doesn't have such a negative impact. Okay,
should we move on to the next question then?
Yeah, yes, the next one's a nice simple one, mainly for Andy, but we get this question at least two or three times every month, so I wanted to make sure that we said this in the podcast rather than just via Twitter and that kind of thing. It's from Brian Greenham, and his question is, how do I access your earlier podcasts? So I think on iTunes and on our website, it only goes back to, is it 31?
Yes, is okay, right. Well, first of all, as soon as we get the, and I believe it's being scheduled to be done, if correct me if I'm wrong, Kelvin, we're going to get a dedicated WordPress site up at the domain internetmarketingpodcast.com. .com?
.org.
.org. Okay.
Yep.
And I believe, do we have any idea when that is going to be ready?
If I say this now, I'm going to have to do it by that date.
Commit to a
You're tying me down, Andy. You're tying me down. I will try and get it sorted as soon as possible on that one.
Yeah, as soon as we have that, it'll be easy, because then you'll just be able to go to the site and play the old episodes directly from the site. Now, until that happens, I am going to have to give you, basically...
I'll tell you what I can do, Andy, that might be a good way of doing this, is I know that there's the workaround that we've got here, haven't we, for this one. Maybe what I ought to do is on the moment, internetmarketingpodcast.org redirects to a channel of our main blog, as it were.
Yes, it does.
Maybe I can do a post this month where I have a link to every podcast we've ever done that links to the
you
kind
could
of
do. Or alternatively, I could just tell the listeners that at the
tell
moment the feed, if you go to the Feedburner feed, which is Feeds2, remember it's Feeds2 now since Google acquired Feedburner, feeds2.feedburner.com/academyim. Because Feedburner gives you a sort of pseudo web page where you can download them from. You'll notice that it goes back to episode, I think it's 35, if I'm not mistaken. If you want episodes before 35, you can download them straight from the server where they're served, which is media1.wireworldmedia.co.uk. There's no www in front of it, just media1.wireworldmedia.co.uk. And then the naming convention for each of the shows is lowercase im for internet marketing, and then 001.mp3, 002.mp3, etc. All the way up to, I think it goes up to 044.mp3. So basically, it is possible to download the early episodes if you don't mind going straight to the server to grab them. So it's media1.wireworldmedia.co.uk/im, and then whatever episode you want prefaced with a zero. So 001, 002, 003.mp3.
We should disclaim those early ones as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, the episode one is highly embarrassing, highly amusing. They gradually get better as you sort of go up the episodes. But until we get the actual WordPress site up, I would suggest that as the way you go for that, to get the early episodes. Sorry about the confusion.
Okay, and then I think on to what is our final question from the listeners this month, which is from a guy called James Keith. And his question is, firstly, all the usual nice stuff about the podcast, so cheers to that, James. And he said he's recently started up his own business via the web. Is there a podcast or some websites that we could recommend from someone starting from scratch? He's looking for the very basics and what he should do from day one. He's slowly getting his head around things like SEO and pay-per-click, but I have no idea about the little tricks of the trade, which I'm sure there must be out there. He said, I know you've covered a lot of these in your podcast already, but is there any other...
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Podcasts or blogs that you'd particularly recommend for a beginner looking to learn about internet marketing?
I've got a suggestion, but I'm not sure if it's a really good match. There's a superb podcast that I listen. I always do that mistake. There's a superb podcast I listen to, but I think it's aimed more at the sort of the entrepreneurial single person being the internet marketer rather than a sort of corporate type of internet marketing. And it's called Internet Business Mastery by a chap called Jason Van Orden and his co-host Sterling. I can't remember his surname. Sterling and Jay. I actually met Jason Van Orden's a super guy, lovely guy. He used to do some podcasts in the early days, and then he moved more into sort of the general, I wouldn't so much call it internet marketing, I'd call it internet entrepreneurship arena.
Yeah.
And they do actually have a sort of course that you can subscribe to, but they do also have a free podcast that they produce. I think it's once a month like we do. But check it out. Just Google Internet Business Mastery and you'll find their podcast. Very different flavour to this one. They have a sort of movie man voice at the beginning, which is quite cool. Going,
it's a good podcast. Yeah,
it's good. You listen to it, don't you, Kelvin? By the sound of it. But yeah, take a listen to that. But as I say, that is more from the angle of the sort of single person, sort of internet entrepreneur type approach, rather than the sort of the more corporate internet marketing type approach, which is, I think, the way that we come at it. But certainly worth a listen. Any other suggestions from anyone? Yeah.
I'm going to use this as a gratuitous plug moment, if you don't mind.
Oh, please do. Go ahead.
Well, because I've been training for the Chartered Institute of Marketing for years and just kind of running courses, there is a demand out there for internet marketing training generally. And there's lots of sources, but it's hard to find anything that's fairly reliable. So what I'm trying to do at the moment is I'm launching up a new website that's got a blog, it's got podcasts, it's got video training and all that kind of thing associated with it. I'm actually going to be doing some of the audio recording with Andy in the very near future. So if you want to have a look at targetinternet.com, it's not actually launched live yet. It'll be going live in the next kind of 6 to 8 weeks, but there's some initial kind of flavor of what's going on there as well. And you will be able to get at the Internet Marketing Podcast from there as well. So have a look at targetinternet.com, get a feeling for what's going on. If you want to follow me on Twitter, so Daniel Rowles, which is Rowles. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll be the first people to know when it's actually going live, and I will do a special offer. We're having a premium section on there as well, and I'll give out some free memberships to some of the Internet Marketing Podcast listeners.
Fantastic.
Cool, yeah, and I'd recommend having it's kind of a bit removed from the podcast world a little bit. There's a website called webmasterradio.fm, and they operate a bit more like a kind of internet radio station, but you can listen to all the old shows there. They're probably not so great for the beginner, but for anyone who's kind of looking for something that's a bit more involved, there's some, you know, really good people on there. There's like Dave Naylor, who's a really well-respected SEO, who's got a show on there weekly. There's a guy called Yoast, who does all the WordPress. He's like the expert on WordPress, who's really good as well. There's domaining shows on there as well. So they're quite good if you really want to dive down into a particular area of internet marketing. I'll definitely have a look at their site there as well, James.
The other thing I'd mention as well is that if you're interested in software, particular software you need to learn when you're doing these, so say you need to learn how to use Dreamweaver for building websites or Photoshop for changing images, that kind of thing, it's a fantastic website called lynda.com, which is lynda.com.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And you pay a monthly subscription and you get access to a ton of courses on software training, and they're really good. Literally, you'll get an hour or two on each kind of topic, hundreds of courses, how to use Dreamweaver from beginning end to end. So take a look at that. Well worth using. I subscribe to that and use it for learning new software all the time.
Dan, you sound like some great deity. Are you in a really echoey room?
I shouldn't be, I'm afraid. I'm in my new office. I've actually just moved into a new office. So
you need to put some carpet on the floor, I think.
I will do. I apologise.
This is Daniel Rowles.
And also in terms of starting up, I know that there's an interview I've got planned. I don't know if it'll be ready for next month's show, but that'll be particularly about how you... You know, it's going to be asking some a guy called Darren Fell from Crunch.co.uk.
Oh, I know Darren. I've interviewed Darren, yes. Good guy.
Yeah. And I'm hoping to interview him particularly about starting up and setting up a internet business and funding and some of those issues as well, about how to go about getting money to help you start a business. So I've just had an email through while we've been on air confirming that hopefully should be going ahead fairly shortly. So I'll chase that up with him, and hopefully that'll be a good one for James as well there.
Okay, any more ideas on podcasts to listen to for a beginner in the internet marketing realm?
The only one quick one is take a look at shoemoney.com, because Shoe Money is very much on the entrepreneurship side of thing again, but he does have an introduction to internet marketing kind of 12-episode course that you can subscribe to that's free as well. So have a look at shoemoney.com. Again, very different kind of angle to what we're doing, but there's some interesting stuff there, and that 12-week course you can sign up for is very good, actually. There's some good content.
Okay, if that is the end of the questions, shall we then move on swiftly to Daniel's gossip about... I hope we're not getting into trouble for this. I hope no one sues us. You've got some gossip about Google and Twitter, have we? What's going on?
I mean, it's all going around on a lot of the blogs at the moment anyway, and there's lots of discussion. There was discussion of an agreement between Google and Twitter that they're going to now start featuring tweets in Google search and all this sort of thing. But there's been an absolute ton of rumours going around that Google is in the fairly advanced stages of buying Twitter. And just I spoke to someone quite senior in the industry that believes this to be true, but we're not saying it is true, so to kind of disclaim it a little bit that way. But if you think about the logic, Twitter at the moment hasn't found any way of monetizing Twitter, so they need some way of doing that. They don't want to go down the advertising route, so it makes sense for them to partner with somebody that wants more volume, more customers, okay, at the end of the day. So there's a reason why Google would want Twitter, and there's obviously a financial advantage to Twitter. Now, if you look at it from the other perspective as well, is that Google wants to stay at the forefront of search, and if they are searching tweets, they're able to search what people are doing live in real time and that kind of thing. So there is a real advantage to both people being more of a partnership. There was talk that Twitter was in talks with Facebook and various other websites that had high values but weren't actually generating cash. So they were very nervous of doing that because they'd end up just swapping for shares in a company that wasn't necessarily had any value to it, whereas any shares in Google is like getting cash at the end of the day because it does have a direct value to it. So that's what I've heard about the deal at the moment.
I thought Google spidered tweets anyway.
They haven't been using it as part... I mean, they no doubt they've been doing it for some time, but they certainly haven't been doing it as part of the search results.
Okay.
I think it's to try and tie in it a bit more clever, because at the moment they'll index a tweet as if it's a web page, which kind of, I've definitely seen that on my Google alerts. I see where my tweets get indexed there for my name, so I know that. But I think Bing have already done this as well. If you look on Bing and if you search for Bing and Twitter, they've done some quite interesting things where if you search for a topic and sort of check the box that says Twitter, it will show you all the tweets about that as well. But it kind of works in a slightly different way to Twitter search, because Twitter search is kind of quite limited on time. So if it become, if it's more than 7 days old, you're unlikely that you're going to be able to find it in the Twitter search. So it's interesting because, Twitter could have a huge... I think a lot of people are looking at, how are Twitter going to monetize, but, how are they going to put adverts on there, assuming that's the only way you can do it. But I think there's tons of ways that they could make money, even if it was just if you want to confirm your identity here, you have to pay $50 to confirm that it's definitely you. That's for business accounts. It doesn't have to be huge numbers there that they can be doing on that. And there's all kinds of answers. Just think about the data that they've got there in terms of relationships between people, in terms of predicting trends. If Hitwise can charge the amount of, money that they do for their kind of data that they've got, if Twitter could sell that kind of information as well, they know how many people are visiting what pages on what websites and, in real time. It's kind of really potentially hugely valuable that people could, I'm sure people would pay money to get that kind of information that they've got there within their system. It's the same with Spotify. It's like, I would love to know, what artists are most popular on Spotify, what artists some people listen to after listening to another. I think a lot of these social media ones, it's their data that I think has got the real value rather than trying to bung some adverts on top of it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that Google's quite good at identifying those kind of opportunities. And a lot of Google's models up until now have been ad-based. And I think they can see the risk where pay-per-click advertising is becoming still very effective, but it's becoming harder and harder and people are more aware of it and the quality is perceived to have gone down in some places. So they are obviously looking at new monetization models. And there are, as Kelvin says, there are a ton of potential models with Twitter. And I'm sure that Google are kind of wise to that at the end of the day. So I can see a reason for them to have a kind of closer relationship. Whether or not that will come to fruition, I don't know. But it's interesting just to speculate on how it's occurring.
Interesting stuff indeed. Okay, any more thoughts from anyone? Otherwise, we'll move on to the next segment.
The only thing I will say is something that we've not covered in today's show because it's still fairly shortly after launching, but Google have introduced some really interesting functionality into Google Analytics, like alerts that will tell you if your traffic's gone up and down, and like you can now have 20 goals in your account rather than just 5. So there's some really interesting stuff they've done there. I've not really had a chance to dive in and do enough coverage for the show here, but definitely have a look at that if you're using Google Analytics. They've done some great new stuff, but we'll try and give you a bit more of a clearer update on that next month, I think.
So you only get leading-edge news here on internet marketing. Any other thoughts, Helen or Dan?
No, nothing more for me today, I don't think.
Yeah, I haven't got anything.
All right, then. Well, look, just before we move on to the interview, a very, very quick... it's a sort of a pseudo-plug, pseudo-asking for help here. The book that I'm writing, Podcasting Unleashed, How to Turn Your Passion into an Audio Podcast, is going on quite well. I need some questions and some feedback. So I have started a Google group called Podcasting Unleashed, and if you go to the book's website, which is podcastingunleashedthebook.com, There will be a link to the Google group there. So basically, anyone thinking of starting a podcast, got some questions or some tips, or just want some feedback, or want to sort of talk to other people that are doing similar things, certainly take part in the group. The book is available for sale on an early bird discount. If you put "I listen" all together into the book buying bit, you can get a discount, an early bird discount, and that will give you a sort of, you're not buying a complete book, it will give you access all the way up to edition one. So if you want to support the project, you can do so, but it's not obligatory. The main thing I wanted to mention was just the Google group for the discussion. So having said all that, let us move on to the next segment, which is me interviewing Miles Galliford, who is the head guy behind SubHub. So just before we go on to that, let's say goodbye to our three co-presenters, Dan Rowles.
See you later, everybody.
Helen Trendle.
See you soon.
And Kelvin Newman.
Bye-bye.
See you, folks. See you next time, and enjoy the interview. I'm very honoured to be joined by Miles Galliford, the co-founder of SubHub, and thank you very much for coming on the show, Miles.
That's a pleasure. It's good to be on your show.
Now, the first thing is, tell us just very, very briefly about subhub.com.
Well, myself and my co-founder, Evan Rudowski, we set up the company to help anybody with specialist content to make money from it online. So it's a complete set of tools to help you build a website, publish and manage it, and then make money from it. And the money can be from advertising or inserting affiliate revenue, affiliate marketing links, or from membership and subscription.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a bit more in detail about that towards the end. One question I've got for you, though, is I'm very interested. There's a lot of people who listen to this show who they're either already doing some kind of internet business, but I think there's a lot of people listening who are sort of on the cusp of doing it, or they're thinking of doing it, or they don't quite know the way forward. What advice would you give to people thinking of starting some sort of perhaps, you know, subscription-based site or selling online some sort of digital product but haven't yet got round to it? What sort of advice would you give them?
Well, there's two bits of advice that I would, which stand out from looking at, you know, we've got hundreds of clients in the UK and the US, and over the last few years, I've spotted trends that clearly show which ones are really successful and which ones tend not to be successful or fail. And the number one is the people who succeed are people who pursue their passion. They create a website about something they're really, really interested in. So they have credibility and authority amongst their audience, and they become number one or number two in their niche. It's so clear to me when we look at the people who are making a lot of money that they really believe in what they're doing. And often the people who fail look around the web to see who's making money and then try and copy them. And invariably they run out of steam, or there's someone else out there doing what they're trying to do better. And then the second point is spend time building your credibility and authority online by giving stuff away for free. Even if your way of making money is subscription and paid membership, you still have to build authority and credibility. And that means giving away free content and free ebooks, so that people can really see that you know what you're talking about, and then have a way of upselling people and getting them into your premium subscription model or other ways of making money.
You're a man after my own heart, you know, Miles.
Right.
What would you say to people who are afraid of giving away too much information? You get some people that say, oh, I don't want to give away the crown jewels of the business.
Well, it's proven over and over again. You have to look at what value you're giving to them. And you can put the bits of real value for your real loyal audiences behind a paid wall or in a community with limited access. And I'll give you an example. There's one client we have in the US, and he gives away 1% of his information, but he charges, I think now, probably $200 a month for access to that information. He's a share tipper. Wow. And so his buy and sell information is in his private area, but all his research is in the public domain. And that's 99% of what he does during his working day is do the research and analysis. But then when he actually gets into a stock and out of a stock, he puts in the paid area, because that's what actually makes his clients money. So it's actually working out where the real value is and then choosing how to make money from that. It could be through paid subscription, or it could be putting that into a book or into events and courses and then selling that real value. Mm. But the rest of it, you know, provide for free to make people want to go the extra step.
Yeah. Now, that's a wonderful segue into this concept of the freemium model or pattern. I was really interested in exactly your interpretation of how that works. I'm particularly interested, actually, in the Financial Times freemium model, where they ask you to pay on your sort of third or fourth visit, don't they, versus making some content permanently free and another paid. What's your view? Because there's a bit of a raving battle, isn't there, about the freemium model online?
Absolutely. There's quite a few points in that question. First, to cover the Financial Times. Now, I personally think they've created the perfect business model to minimize their revenues. you can go one of two ways on the internet. You either have to build an audience and page views and get people looking at your content, and then you monetize the audience and the traffic, or you hide your premium, you know, as much premium stuff as possible and get them to pay for it. What they've done is they've minimized the amount of pages people can look at, so they've minimized the traffic, but, you know, for the majority of readers, they can see enough to be satisfied without paying a premium to go to the next model. So I would suspect they've probably got the majority of the people who are prepared to pay paying now. And I noticed in the figures they released just recently that their subscription sign-up rate has dropped off. And I would predict, and I may be wrong, that subscription level will start dropping, and they will counteract that, no doubt, by reducing the amount of free content. And I think they've probably got their, you know, business model screwed up. But we'll wait and see.
Yeah, time will tell.
Yeah. The other point you raised is what's happening in this industry is there's this battle going on between paid versus free, and it's been very polarized. That's what's been covered. You either in one camp or the other. The Rupert Murdochs want everything to be paid, and he's trying to persuade the industry to go that route. And then the likes of Chris Anderson, who wrote the book Freemium, wants everything to be free, but with kind of an upsell model. But I think the best way of looking at it is look at traditional magazine publishing. If you look at a good magazine, like I've got in front of me at the moment, Gardener's World,
mm-hmm.
on the front of it has the price, and that's what they sell it as one-off copies on the newsstand. And then you open it up, and it has subscription, and it encourages people with discounts to pay for a subscription. Then it has display advertising. It has classified advertising. It has a paid supplier directory. It has affiliate deals with shared revenue for holidays and insurance. They promote offline events, and those offline events have sponsors. And if you go through it, just within one copy of Gardener's World, you can identify 12 different revenue streams.
Mm.
But when people move online, they seem to forget all those lessons, particularly magazine publishers and newspaper publishers. They forget those lessons. They move online, and then they get into this argument about free versus paid. Whereas I believe the best content sites will have multiple revenue streams, some of them driven from free content, and others will be, you know, access to paid content, as I say, either through subscription or through selling that in e-books or documents or courses.
Mm.
And also, you know, promoting offline events, using the web to promote offline events.
Do you think people demark between the physical world and the online world a bit too much?
Yeah, they do. They do, and particularly publishers. The magazine publishers and newsletter publishers, they tend to talk in terms of revenue cannibalization. You know, they don't want to do too much on the internet because it will cannibalize the revenues of their offline products.
Mm.
And I think they have to get far more clever at cross-selling, cross-promotion, using the web to reach a bigger audience than they could otherwise reach, and then using that audience to promote offline events. And I think there's lots of, they can be far cleverer about what they do in that cross-promotion.
Sure, yeah. So what do you think are the common pitfalls to avoid when setting up and sort of running a subscription site or some sort of digital product business?
You know, the obvious one is chasing the profitable niches. You know, there's a handful of niches which are clearly well covered.
Such as internet marketing.
Internet marketing, yes. That's very well covered, as you'd expect, because yeah. it's the right medium for that audience. But health and fitness is very well covered. Finance, share tipping services is becoming more and more well covered. It's not about chasing the niche and making money. As I said after the first question, is owning a niche, owning a niche that you're passionate about.
Mm, yeah.
The other thing is on the technology front is, if you're not technical, don't get caught up in trying to run a technology yourself. Get someone else either to do it for you, or as I would say myself, because I run a managed service, is get a managed service so that you can spend your time creating content and building a business, not running the technology. It can be a very time-consuming and unproductive task.
Especially when it goes wrong.
Especially when it goes wrong, and then there's a lot of blame throwing between the hardware, the hardware people and the software people. Just don't get into that situation. Spend time just thinking about payment processing and those practical steps. You probably, even if you don't set out to have an international audience, you probably will end up having an international audience. So think about being able to take multiple currencies, UK, US. Particular and the euro, and to be sure you use a payment provider that's reliable. We have a lot of horror stories about payment providers and accounts being frozen. Mm. I used to hate PayPal, but I think they've got a lot better, and it's a great starting point.
Yeah,
using PayPal. One very important thing that every content creator, publisher, or owner should be doing is building an email list, so that they can be in control of the relationship with their followers, prospects, clients. I think the figure is 98% of people who come to a website once, look at one page and leave, never return. So you've got to do whatever you can to engage them when they arrive, get them to look at multiple pages, and then get their email address on that first visit. Otherwise, the big majority of those people you'll lose.
Sure.
So building a relationship is very important. And leave the monetization in the background. Focus on relationship first, engagement, relationship, and then the way you're going to monetize that relationship. Because it's damn hard to make money from someone on their first trip to their website.
Mm.
A lot of them do. Most of the monetization opportunities come after you've built a relationship with your customer or with your prospect.
Sure. Now, you mentioned earlier about doing something online based around your passion, and you also mentioned about the importance of a niche. What's the best way, in your opinion, of finding the right niche that's based on your passion if you want to do some sort of online business?
What I usually recommend to people who come to us and ask that question is just make a list of the top 10 keywords that describe your passion. So if it's fly fishing in Scotland, then the obvious ones are going to be fly fishing Scotland, fishing holidays Scotland, etc. Then just go into a search engine, put them into a search engine, and see what comes up, because they are your competitors. If you look at most of the sites on the page one of what comes up in Google, you just got to ask yourself, is, can I do a better job than they're doing? Also have a look at how many sites have been indexed by just looking at the top of the Google search results. And if there's a decent number, it means there's a decent number of people searching for that term. But that's essentially what I tell them to do. And then there's, you know, you can go and use Google Trends and stuff like that just to see which way the trends are going. Mm. But you know, it comes down to who else is doing it and can I do a better job?
Sure. Now, what about promotion? How would you advise people to sort of promote their membership site? I mean, are there any particularly good methods or tools suited to promoting your membership site?
Yeah. Well, I'm a really strong believer and practicer of the fact that there are just two things you need to do to successfully market a content site, and that is continually create and publish good quality content, paying some attention to the keywords you use in that content, not becoming obsessive about it, but paying some attention to it, and then actively encouraging linking into those pages of content. And by actively, that's both doing yourself by going to forums and ensuring you have a link within the forum post that takes people back and putting them into relevant and good quality directories, so proactively getting links back into that article and into your website, but also, you know, participating in the community that you want to be a part of by talking with other bloggers and asking them to link to your sites or giving them free content in exchange for a link back to your site. And that's, you know, for SubHub, that's all we do ourselves. And we have tens of thousands of visitors coming to our site driven just by people finding our content. We publish two or three free articles every month. We are conscious of the keywords we use. And we do actively get links in, but it's driving tens of thousands of people every month to our website. And that's the only marketing we do apart from a bit of Google AdWords stuff, just to get into particular, to the top for particular terms, but it's very little, and we do no other marketing. So it works, and it works for our clients, and it will work for everyone who does it.
Now, I'm interested in SubHub, so it's www.subhub.com.
Tell
us a little bit more detail how the site works. And I'm particularly interested in if you can give some examples of how businesses are using it, obviously without giving business names away.
Yeah. Well, you can go to subhub.com and you can just sign up for a free trial. So, you know, if anyone's interested in this sort of stuff, it's just go and give it a go. But it basically, you go sign up for a trial. It gives you a choice of templates, or if you have design skills, you can then add your own design or get a designer to add a design for you. You can build your site, you add your content, you add your navigation, and then you're ready to launch. And then it has the additional functionality that you can just turn on. For example, the membership, you know, paid membership, you can just turn on. Or there's an e-commerce store for selling books and CDs and either digital downloads or physical products. And you just turn them on. It's got built-in forums. So everything for building a website, community, and then monetizing content is all in there. And it's, you know, it's a managed service. So we take care of all the hosting and the maintenance upgrades. All the upgrades we do, we just implement. And they're available for our clients.
Okay, so it's basically like a sort of a framework that allows you to very, very quickly set up your online subscription-based website, by the sound of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds really good.
Okay. You know, it's like a content management system like WordPress, except our sole focus is helping people to monetize their content.
Okay. And what sort of businesses are using it, and in what way?
Probably about 30% of our clients are publishing companies. They tend to be the smaller ones who have trade publications or newsletters who are moving online, either totally moving online or setting up a web presence as well as having a physical presence. Mm-hmm. And then the rest are a big mix of authors, journalists, infopreneurs, some academics, quite a few associations and societies who need to share information with their members and collect annual subs from their members. That's really the mix. It's individuals, clubs and associations, and then small publishers tend to be our marketplace.
Well, Miles Galliford of subhub.com, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for asking me. And I look forward to keeping in touch.
Fantastic. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, we would really like to hear from you. So if you have any questions or comments, send them to info@ai-digital.com and feel free to send in MP3 files as well and we'll play them. If you're a subscriber, we'd like to thank you for your valuable time. If you haven't subscribed yet and you'd like this show delivered to your earbuds automatically, you can find Internet Marketing on iTunes. Just search under the Business and Marketing and Management categories. Or you can find us at Feedburner at feeds.feedburner.com/academyim. We'd also encourage you to leave comments on iTunes. Well, this is Andy White signing off, wishing you the best until we see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.